भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यास ततो जायमुदीरये नष्टप्रायश्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तमाश्लोके भक्तेर्भवति नैष्ठिके।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 57 टेक्स्ट नंबर 5 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड सत्रजित मर्डर्ड द ज्वेल रिटर्न्ड।
एवं भिन्ना मति ताभ्यं सत्राजितं असत्तमः शयानम् अवदीत् लोभा स पापः क्षिणा जीवितः। एवं भिन्नमतेस्ताभ्या सत्राजितम् असत्तमः शयानम् अवधि लोभा स पापाशिना जीवितः। एवं भिन्नमतेस्ताभ्या सत्राजितम् असत्तमः शयानम् अवधि लोभा स पापाशिन जीवितः। एवं भिन्नमतेस्ताभ्या सत्राजितम् असत्तमः शयानम् अवधि लोभा स पापाशिन जीवितः। सत्राजिता सत्तमः शयानम् अवधि लोभा एवं भिन्ना मतिस्ताभ्याम् सत्राजिता असत्तमः शयानम् अवधि लोभा स पापाशिन जीवितः। एवं भिन्नमतिस्ताभ्याम् स्वपापाशिन जीविता।
माताजी
एवं भिन्नमतिस्ताभ्याम् सत्राजितमसत्तमः शयनमवधि लोभा स्वपापाशिन जीवि एवं दस भिन्न एफेक्टेड मति हुज माइंड ताभ्याम बाय द टू ऑफ देम सत्राजितम् सत्राजित असत्तमः द मोस्ट विकेड शयानम् स्लीपिंग avadhi,
killed. Lobha, out of greed.
Saha,
he.
Papaha,
sinful.
Shina,
diminished.
Jivitaha,
whose lifespan. Translation and purport by the disciples of Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: his mind thus influenced by the advice, wicked Shatadhanva murdered Satrajit in his sleep simply out of greed. In this way, the sinful Shatadhanva shortened his own lifespan. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the word asattamaha indicates that Shatadhanva was basically evil-minded and a firm hater of Satrajit.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabho Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. So as you all know that a conspiracy has been created to kill Satrajit, and Shatadhanva here mentions that he has murdered Satrajit, and the translation mentions that he murdered out of greed, and in the purport Shri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Shatadhanva was actually an evil-minded person and he hated Satrajit. So, because he was evil-minded and he hated Satrajit, so he got an opportunity. He was instructed to kill, so he killed. You know, otherwise, it would never happen. What is there in your mind will have to come out in action somewhere or the other. If he was not an evil-minded person and if he did not hate Satrajit, probably if anybody would have told him, he would have thought twice before he performed that act. It was like, you know, he was given the sanction to kill, you know. So this is how our mind actually works. We just have something in mind, and then when somebody tells us something, then we feel that it's approved and then we perform that act and then we put the thing on the person who mentioned. You know, it may also extrapolate to some instructions that we may receive. You know, sometimes we may go on asking our authorities, different authorities, till we come, get to know or we get an answer which is there in our mind or about which we want to do in our mind, you know. And then we say, oh, this person told me to do it. That's why I did. But it's not the way. It may just happen that probably you wanted to do it and you found a person who told you to do it and you do it like that. So here we find Satrajit here, Shatadhanva, being evil-minded and out of greed, you know, he actually would have killed Satrajit either way. But now he has received an instruction from, you know, Kritavarma that he should kill. So he just went and killed him. And how did he kill? He killed him in his sleep. Like even a sane person would not do it, as Kshatriya also, whatever. You know, you would not do it like that. Just someone who is asleep and you kill him like that. So, what sort of a situation that one can be when one is under the influence of greed? As in Bhagavad Gita mentions that, you know, Trivida Narkasya Dham. You know, what is that? Nashana Atmanam. You know, you just, there are three gates to hell. Kamas, Krodhas, Tata, Lobhas. That is lust, anger and greed. These are three gates to hell. You know, when somebody is under the influence of lust, anger, greed, you cannot determine what the person will actually do. In Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that how a person's intelligence is completely lost. Dhyayato vishyan pumsam, sangaste supajayate, sangha sanjayate kama, kamas krodha lubhayate. Krodhat bhavatu sanjaya, krodhat bhavatu sammoha, sammoha smriti mibrava. Smriti brahmshat, buddhinasha pranashati. So once you are, you know, contemplating the objects of senses, you develop an attachment. Lust arises in your heart. When that is not fulfilled, anger, because of the bewilderment of memory, and then intelligence is lost. Then what you do, you know, it may not be in your control. In a fit of anger, a person sometimes does say something or perform some acts and then he repents afterwards. You know, many things in our life we see in day to day that under the influence of anger or maybe under the influence of lust or under the influence of greed, a person can do or go to any extent to get those things done. You know, as there is a saying, there's enough in this world for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed. So, because the resources in the material world are limited, but the nature to enjoy is unlimited. You want to enjoy as much as possible. So out of greed, you try to do so many things which are not in accordance with the laws of nature. And it's mentioned that because of this, he shortened his lifespan. So it said that anything that you do which is against the laws of nature will actually shorten your lifespan, because that is sinful. The Lord has given certain things that we are supposed to follow, and if you go against those laws, then what happens is that, you know, it becomes a sinful activity and your lifespan is shortened. That's why you find in the age of Kali Yuga, none of us will live our full life. Because collectively and individually we are all responsible. Individually we also perform so many acts which are against the laws of nature. And collectively as a society also we perform so many things which are against the laws of nature. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 8th chapter and the 5th verse, there is a mention how, you know, Duryodhan and his brother Dushasan tried to disrobe Draupadi. And because of this particular act, their lifespan shortened. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that, you know, the society, for it to progress, it needs to take care of the five, you know, things. That's a principle. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that how, that you know, number one is the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas are persons who are actually there to establish the principles of religion, establish Varnashrama in the society. And if they are not taken care of nicely, then the whole society goes into doldrums. Then the cows, you know, the cows, they give us the miracle food, that's milk. We just, you know, sharpens our finer brain tissues to understand the spiritual subject matter. And then when one does not take care of the cows, protect the cows, then what happens? The society doesn't prosper. Then the women. The women need to be protected because, you know, in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjun did not want to fight because he was saying that if I kill all these people, then there will be women will be unprotected. And because they are unprotected, Varna Sankara, people will exploit them. There will be unwanted population. So the women, you know, they are like, they protect chastity of the society. And they are the ones who are really, really going to, you know, maintain the society by producing, you know, good children and maybe giving the right culture, the samskaras for the next generation. So it's necessary that the women need to be protected. And then the children. The children, you know, because they need to protect it because they can at least get a platform where they can prepare themselves to get liberated from this bondage. And the old age. Old people. Now, old people from, you know, point of view of contribution to society, they may not do anything. They may not even contribute a, you know, little aspect also. But they need to be protected because by protecting them, you know, the whatever they have experienced or whatever they have assimilated throughout their life, they can transmit on to the generation which are present now. At the same time, by just protecting them, we are actually helping them to prepare for the next life. So it is said that Prabhupada mentions over there that any society which protects these five classes of people, then that society will progress like anything. But at the same time, if we don't do that, then he said the society will be completely in a mess. That's in a society. But individually what happens? Individually we also will be implicated in that. You know, your lifespan will be reduced. Everything will be, that's what is happening here. So as a society, one needs to understand that these things have to be taken care of. As an institution, we need to take care of all these aspects. So when these are taken care of, then the things are in the right place. You know, we have to live a life of integrity. So in order to prevent this aspect, then one has to live a life like that. Otherwise, our life will be full of conceit. You know, one loses his integrity, one loses his character, one loses respect, truthfulness, honesty, all these are lost. Rupa Goswami mentions that if one has to become greedy, then one has to become greedy for Krishna. You know, elsewhere, different places where Prabhupada mentions that when one goes against the laws of nature, the lifespan shortens. Why? Because many things. That we don't offer respects to elders, you know, not obeying the orders of the superiors, performing heinous acts, or sometimes blaspheming the devotees or blaspheming living entities also. Respecting other living entities, that's the most important aspect. When you respect someone else, then you know, you actually you safeguard the culture of the society. But that is lost. Nowhere you find now, you know, that the younger generation respects the elder generation. It is said that the moment you disrespect any elder, then your lifespan actually reduces. It actually reduces if you disrespect your elders. But now that culture is slowly is getting lost because of, you know, being independent or it was not there at all. Earlier, you will find that earlier the children would come, bowed on to the elders, you know, would not argue. But now that argument is there. Why? Why I should do this? Why I should not do this? But then that culture is slowly getting lost. But one needs to protect that culture If you protect the culture, then the society will progress. Otherwise, no way the society can go ahead. So it is said that the quality of life deteriorates, and whilst one place, Srila Prabhupada mentions that what is the use of living a life like that when you are being just, you know, continuously performing all these particular activities which are against the natural laws. You know? So we have to live a life of integrity, and we have to live a life where it leaves aside behind a legacy for the next generation to follow. You know, that's very important. Just recently, one of our dear god sisters, Mukhara Mataji, left her body. And when she left her body, her husband, I just happened to ask him one simple question. I said, can you tell me something about her? So she said, he started speaking for almost like 20 minutes. And the essence of the whole discussion or his speaking about her was that she always respected all the devotees. She never criticized anyone. She never thought ill about anyone. Even if it means, you know, like sometimes she's in charge of a particular service and somebody acted irresponsibly, or probably somebody, you know, did not adhere to that punctuality or something like that. She never, you know, thought anything about that person or why that person did not come or why. Never at any time. She said, okay, no, we have to do it. Maybe that person has something because of which the person has not come. So let me do the service. And she would personally go and do the service in the temple. And at any time, she was very enthusiastic to serve Vaishnavas at any given point of time, in the night, in the day, middle of the night also. Sometimes there would be 50, 60 of them would come to her house and she would cook prasad in the middle of the night. At any given point of time, she would always be eager to serve. And serve without any discrimination. Not that, oh, this person is influential, I should give him more time and attention. That person is not, so maybe I'll look at him later on. No, nothing like that. It was that very eager to serve and very enthusiastic to do that particular activity. But one thing why I understood from that, you know, this person, Mukhara Mataji, that she never criticized or she never thought ill about anyone. She always respected each and everyone. She offered so much of respect and she always dealt with everyone with that much of respect. And because of that, you know, like definitely she has got a higher destination. So this is what I was trying to remember, that, you know, such are the people who will leave behind a legacy for us to understand and for us to follow, you know, like that. So if you just can avoid all these things as far as lives are concerned, then we'll much more better be engaged fully in Krishna conscious serve Vaishnavas. Today is the disappearance day of Srila Madhvacharya, and I was thinking that I should speak something about him for my own purification, though all of us know about this personality. In fact, we are all called as Brahma Madhvya. We are all in the disciplinary section of Brahma Madhvya, Gaudiya Sampradaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually took initiation in this Sampradaya because of two important principles that Madhvacharya actually advocated. One is the strict deity worship that he followed, and the second thing was strong refutation of Mayavad philosophy. So Chaitanya took two points from each of the four Sampradayas, but then ultimately he took initiation from this particular Sampradaya for these two aspects, because the nature of this, you know, material world and living entities that want to decry the existence of the Lord as a person, and rampant, you know, spread of the impersonalism and voidism. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to just establish this particular aspect that the Lord is a person and he can be offered service as a person. So this aspect was taken into consideration, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually accepted initiation in this particular sampradaya, and that's why we are all called as Gaudiya Vaishnava, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So many aspects to learn from Madhvacharya's life. In fact, yes, we are all indebted to him for his contribution to the society. It is said that, you know, at a time when there was lot of, you know, spread of impulsism and voidism existing in the, you know, almost like 13th century, that time the demigods, they approached Lord Vishnu and they said, please do something because it's become so rampant. And Vishnu realized, and it's not the time for Lord to incarnate, the time was not there. So when Lord Vishnu with the Brahmaji, of course demigods came with approach with Brahmaji, and then Lord Vishnu told them that I will send one of my representatives to re-establish these principles of Vaishnavism, and he ordered Vayudev to do that particular job. And he said that in a place called as Pajakshatra, there was a great Brahmana, his name was Madhyagya Bhat, and it is said that he was so simple at heart, very devotional, and would travel every day from his place Pajakshatra to Udupi at Ananteshwar temple to take darshan. And seems on a particular day in Makar Sankranti, one man, he just immediately climbed up the flag post and started shouting that there will be soon a person who will be born here who will be there to defeat these simplistic ideas and then establish these principles of, you know, dharma, Vaishnava dharma. And he shouted so early, everyone gathered, they heard, and everyone disappeared. And Madhyagya Bhat was also there. But little did he realize that the person whom he was talking about was a person who is going to be his son in due course of time. So after he got married to Vedavati, they desired to have a son who can be a very good Vaishnava. And because of this, he performed penance for almost like 12 years. You can imagine, you know, to have a good son to perform austerities for 12 years, you know, that means so much they wanted to have a son for that. Like so much of preparations that they had to, they were ready to do just to have that. And when the right time came, you know, Vayudev entered the womb of Vedavati, and then the child was born. And when the astrologers saw the child's horoscope, they found that he had all those 32 auspicious characteristics which are needed to form in a great personality. And then he proclaimed that this person is going to do something very revolutionary and is going to do something which no one has done up till then. And then he named him he gave him the name Vasudev. And then Vasudev, as when he was small also, he would just, you know, would exhibit so many characteristics which was something not ordinary, it was extraordinary, you can say. It said on her 40th day, when the mother took the child to Ananteshwar temple for darshan, on the way home they had to pass through a jungle back, because it's like a 12 kilometer distance from Pajakshetra to Udupi. And it said that on the way a Brahma Rakshas, you know, haunted one of those people accompanying them. And however well Madhyagya Bhat tried to, you know, chant mantras and sprinkle water on the body of that person who was being haunted by that Brahma Rakshas, the Brahma Rakshas would not go. He just completely fell down unconscious. So it is said that at that time the Brahma Rakshas started speaking through him and said, I know that this personality is a very great personality, and I will be liberated from this body of this person only if you allow me to touch, or if you make the lotus feet of this child to touch my head of this person. And they touched him, and suddenly the Brahma Rakshas left that place. And as Yashoda would always take care of mother Yashoda take care of the child Krishna when he was in danger, So both Madhyage Bhatt and Vedavati were thinking that maybe we should take care of our child, because so many things, elements are there which can just trouble our child, you know. So they would perform so many, you know, rituals just to see that the child is protected. You know, when you are small, it seems like he was very hungry, mother was not there, and he was crying for food. And the sister, some other, could not find anything, but just found some grains around, so that which were supposed to be given to the cows. And she just got one big sack of grains and opened some little and gave it to. And meanwhile, she just went outside to do something. By the time came back, the child had finished off the entire 40 kgs of grain completely. So this was really astonishing for the sister and the mother also. They were wondering what's happened, because they never thought that something like this would be done. So it said that they performed what is called as Dhanvantri Shantishukta prayers. They started chanting just so that the child's health should be all right. Because someone consuming so much, you know, at that age, you know, mother would definitely feel that the child would have indigestion or probably have problems. So they started chanting very frantically Dhanvantri Shantishukta prayers so that the child can be safe and healthy. And he would do such feats. You know, one day it seems in their absence, he just caught the tail of a bull, and the bull, being afraid of that, started running around. And all throughout the bull was running, but the child did not leave the tail of the bull. So till evening, it seemed the child was just moving around with the bull, holding the tail. You know, such was his strength. The bull was moving around here and there, but the child would just be there. So when he grew a little older, it said that once, when he was requesting his father to come for prasad inside, the father was sitting out at the doorstep. The father explained to the son that today I cannot, because I have a loan to repay to one person, Kakra Shetty, and because I am not able to repay, he's come here. He says that he is insisting that he wants the money today itself, and since I cannot give him, I am fasting like him, because he's also sitting there. I am also sitting, because he's not going till I give him the money, and I don't have money, so I can't do anything. So I'm just sitting. Oh, is that so? That much? Don't worry. And he just went to the courtyard. He just got some tamarind seeds, and he just went to this Kakra Shetty. He said, "Just open your hands and take this tamarind seeds." With so much of innocence, he just told him to take the tamarind seeds. He actually accepted it, but the moment he accepted it, those tamarind seeds turned into gold coins, enough or much more than what he had actually had the father had owed him. So happily he just, you know, went away. Second time when he came back, you know, that time he gave him love of God. That's what is mentioned. And at this point, I just want to share something which our dear God brother Shubhulas Prabhu shared when we had been to Udupi at Pajaka Kshetra. Very nice, informative thing that he shared with us. He said that tamarind seeds are what? Like, nobody has tamarind seeds. They don't have any value. No value at all, except that you can play with them. Nowadays, nobody plays also. Everyone has video games to play. But in earlier days, you know, like if you have tamarind seeds, you eat the outer ones, the thing which is the fruit. But the inside seed, you don't do anything. They're useless. They are just thrown away on the ground. Only the children, you know, they'll pick up those tamarind seeds and probably they play with them, you know. So they are useless actually. So you are saying that, you know, all of us are like those tamarind seeds. We are like useless. Basically we are useless, you know. She said, but when we come under the influence or under the shelter of a spiritual master, you know, we also have a lot of rin. We have a lot of debt that we owe to our, you know, predecessor acharyas for perform some services. So individually, if you see, we are all like tamarind seeds. But when we take shelter of a spiritual master, then the spiritual master, you know, uses us and then converts us into valuable objects which can be offered to our spiritual predecessors, and thus absolve us from all the debts that we have towards them. So the tamarind seeds are like us, and Madhacharya like as Vasudev, like a spiritual master, and Kakrashita is like those acharyas whom we owe. And as soon as we are engaged under, or we are under that shelter of spiritual master, we are converted, and then we can become wonderful instruments. So it's not our glory, it's the glory of the spiritual master who makes us do that. Just like the tamarind seeds had no value, but then when Vasudev went there and gave these tamarind seeds, those tamarind seeds became gold coins. So that's the way we look at it. It said that, you know, there is a parvat called as Bhimangiri, where the Durga temple, and Vasudev, when he was small, he would always go there and play for hours and hours and hours, and said that he would be appearing to be playing alone, but then Durga Devi would be there, would be always there playing, assisting him in the playing. So this is what he would be doing. And when the time came for Vidyarambha ceremony, where he needed to write, you know, that's one of the samskaras that a child is made to write. So the moment he was made to write, he started writing on his own, you know. So they were all shocked, how is he able to do that? He said, I know everything, all this. I don't need to, you know, write again and again. Sometimes you make, the mother makes the child write A again and again. He says, I know all this. So he would write all the letters on his own. So he says, instinctively, he said, I know everything. Not so much difficulty, you know, like that. So this is how he would be. And then it said that, you know, he was so smart and so intelligent that he would just pick up things like anything. And then when his father would take them to some discourses, and he would hear a speaker speaking something which is against the injunctions of the Shastras, he would immediately get up and challenge the person and say that you are not speaking according to scriptures. He was just like a 4-year-old child. And then this would insult the speaker, and the speaker would say, okay, why don't you explain? And then he would explain in such a way that it would mesmerize everyone, and you know, everyone would be attracted. How this boy knows? Once his father sat down for a class, and father was giving a class, and he was giving a, you know, a purport, and was explaining the different trees, the Tulsi tree, the banyan tree, but he was avoiding the Likucha tree. He did not know himself, so he did not speak about it. So then Vasudev got up, he said, you are not speaking Bhagavatam, because you are not explaining what is there in the Shastra. So the father accepted. He said, I don't know the meaning of Likucha. He says, so you have no right to speak Bhagavatam if you cannot say that. And then he said, Likucha means a lime tree. You know. So the father did not know what is Likucha. So he did not. He conveniently avoided. He explained everything. He says, you are not presenting the Bhagavatam in totality, so you cannot speak. So like that, you know, he would never... he cannot tolerate anyone speaking anything else, but then just conform it to Shastras, one thing, and you know, trying to imply to this particular act that how only when somebody has understood Shastra, he should speak, you know, not that just speak because you have to speak like that. So, and then a time came when the father decided he should be given an Upanayan samskar. Normally it is done at age of 8, but at age of 5 only he decided that I should do that for him. And the child was, the samskar was done, and it seems the child picked up all the shlokas to be needed to be learned immediately. It was not that, you know, the moment it was told to him, on that particular moment only the child learned everything. So this was quite amazing how the child learned, much to the astonishment of all those who were present. And said that after the samskara, when they are walking back, they are confronted by the Maniman demon, who at the time of, you know, Dwapar Yuga was killed by Bhima. and she wanted to take revenge. So he again took birth. He was here, appeared here. He wanted to somehow or the other, you know, kill Madhvacharya, Vasudev, the child. So when he attacked, you know, and tried to bite him, it did not affect him at all. On the contrary, Vasudev just held him, and with the toe, he just crushed the Maniman demon completely. You know, and this place is still there for us all of us to see that place. And the next moment, when the child, when the mother found that he is nowhere around, called for the child, as the child jumped, you know, in one leap he just reached his house. So that's how he would do all these activities, you know. So, and his childhood pastimes would be like, you know, he would invite everyone to wrestle with him. Like, and he would not wrestle with the children of his age. Elderly boys, tough boys, he would just wrestle, he says, wrestle with me, and he would just defeat them very easily. Till he doesn't leave them, they cannot leave that, leave his grip. It was like that, you know. So that's how he would do. And then he was sent to a teacher to learn. And it was so happening that whenever the teacher would learn, he would just leave the house, he would leave the place, go home, and very slowly he'll come back. So once his teacher asked him, he said, "You don't want to learn or what? Why are you going there? How will you learn if you don't sit in the class?" He says, "You are repeating so many things, I already know whatever you have told me. So if you told me, you tell me. Repeat." And he would repeat everything what the teacher had taught. And that would astonish the teacher, because, you know, the child would just remember everything what was taught to him at once. And at that time, he just memorized the Aitriya Upanishad, which are the verses glorifying the Lord's name, form, pastimes, everything. And that became one of his favorites. Like, wherever he would go, he would always chant from those Aitriya Upanishad, glorifying the wonderful qualities of the Lord. And that's the time he actually, in his mind, he decided that, you know, a time has come for me to just fulfill the mission for which I have come here. And because of strong desire in him to do that, you know, it made him connected to his guru, who would later on become his guru. There is Achyuta Preksha. So when Achyuta Preksha was near Anantheshwar temple in his own mutt, and Vasudev came there, and Vasudev just had saw him, and he got attracted to Achyuta Preksha. And Achyuta Preksha just looked at him, and he got attracted to Vasudev. And he was not understanding why he is attracted to him, but somehow that attraction was there. And it's mentioned that Achyuta Preksha is actually like a he was actually a bumblebee in the palace of the Pandavas. That's mentioned. And he would regularly receive prasad from Draupadi's lotus hands. So that particular bumblebee became Achyuta Preksha in this particular incarnation, of in this particular place. And Achyuta Preksha's guru, when he was on his deathbed, it seems he told Achyuta Preksha that, "Please try to propagate these principles of Vaishnavas. I want to do that. I want to defeat the philosophy of the monism and voidism. And please do that. This is my instruction to you." And some or the other, Achyuta Preksha and the other few followers, they could not understand how this can be done, because it was so rampant at that time. They somehow did not have that strength or ability to confront all these people, the impersonalists. So they were just wondering, and all the time it was like a prayer to him, prayer that, "Why? How can I do this? How can I do this?" You know. And it seems at that time in Anantheshwar temple, you know, normally it would happen like this, that something has to be conveyed to him. Lord Anantheshwar would empower a person to come and speak to him. So at that time a person came in front of him and said, "Very soon I will send a person to you to fulfill the instructions of your spiritual master." And lo and behold, within few days, Vasudev met Achyuta Preksha, and Achyuta Preksha then understood that this person probably is the one who is Because when he was speaking to him philosophy, that time you could understand the child is not an ordinary child. That he had so much to learn. In fact, he in his mind accepted him as his guru. Externally, Vasudeva accepted Achyutapraksha, but in his mind, Achyutapraksha was accepting him as his guru. So, at that time, Vasudeva actually said, I want to take sannyas from you. And when this news reached his father, the father came back to him, came to him running. He said, you can't do this. Because after so many years, we have got you, and we are old now, who will take care of us? So that time, Vasudeva said that, I have already decided to, since I am not detached from all this worldly affairs, I have already decided to take to this order. But after so much of persuasion, he said, okay. He offered obeisances to him, the father. He said, see, this is a thing. Now you have offered obeisance to me. A person can, elderly person can offer obeisance to younger only when the person is a sannyasi. So that means you are actually accepting me as a sannyasi. But then later on, he mentioned to him that I will not go till you have a child. So by his desire, Vedavati then later on became pregnant, and after he had a child, then Achyutapraksha decided to go and take sannyas. So it seems at the age of 10 or 12, Achyutapraksha gave him sannyas, and he was named as Purna Pragya because he was so much of knowledge that he had. So he named his Purna Pragya, and as Purna Pragya, it seems that he just, you know, confronted so many Mayavadis, so many, like, you know, philosophies which were against Vaishnava philosophies, and Achyutapraksha becomes so happy that, you know, he is the person who is really going to take on all this impersonalist and the voidist, and then he is the person who will actually establish this particular dharma. So it seems that once he wanted to go to take bath in Ganga, and Achyutapraksha did not want him to leave the place. He was praying intensely that I just don't want to be separated from him. And at that moment, the Ganges appeared and filled a lake there, which is right now known as Madhva Sarovar. So it seems every 12 years, the Ganga flows and fills up that. And, you know, Purna Pragya took bath over there in Ganga. And at that time, Purna Pragya, he wanted to just go and take now a tour of South India. And when this was told to Achyutapraksha, he said, Achyutapraksha said, okay, maybe you should stay for some time, and after some time then you can go ahead. And when that time, Achyutapraksha installed him as the successor and named him as Ananda Tirtha at that time. So after a few days, he just, it seems Ananda Tirtha at that time defeated many such impersonalists like Buddhi Sagar. He was at that time a very renowned impersonalist. And Jains also, like there is one Vadisimha who was a Jainist. So he defeated him also. And then afterwards, he just was on his way about to leave for South India tour. And then during the South India tour, Achyutapraksha said, I would also like to come with you. And during that tour of South India, he just went to a place called as Vishnu Mangalam. Can I take another 10 minutes? Speak. So it said at Vishnu Mangalam, there he did something quite inhumanly. That is, you know, having 100 bananas at one time, which were like 1.5, you know, inch long. And huge ones, big ones. So, and at Ananta Padmanabh temple, there he gave lecture on Brahma Sutra. And that's where he established his Dvaitavad philosophy. And he established the 5 principles of Dvaitavad. The number one is the difference between the differences. How the Jiva is different from the Supreme Lord, the number one. That the Jiva cannot be same as the Supreme Lord. Jiva is subordinate to the Supreme Lord. The number two is that how the Supreme Lord is different from the matter. Supreme Lord is, you know, always eternal, whereas the matter is immobile. How the Jiva is different from a Jiva. Like, I am not you, you are not me. Jeva is different from the Jiva. And how the Jiva is different from the matter. Like how the material body is different from the soul. And how the material, you know, matter is different from the matter. That a tree has a particular function when it's in the forest, but then when it's cut and subjected to fire, it has a different quality. So this is what he actually established, Dvaita philosophy. That was one of his strong, one foremost contributions. And there, when he was at Anantapadmanabha temple, very close by the Sringeri Mutt, and there he confronted Vidyasagar Shankar, the foremost acharya of the Shankaracharya Mutt, and he defeated him completely over there. And at Srirangam, there he confronted the Brahmanas, and where there was a confrontation, and where he said that, you know, every word of Veda is equal to three, has three meanings. Every word of Mahabharata has 10 meanings, and every word of Vishnu Sahasranama has 100 meanings. So the Brahman said, why don't you just explain like this? So he said, okay, let me explain. So the first word he took, okay, Vishwa. Vishwa means what? Vishnu. So the first meaning, Vishnu, is that because he penetrates the universe. Second meaning of Vishwa is because he is pervading the universe. Third meaning of Vishwa is because he is carried by Garuda. Fourth meaning of Vishwa is perfect in all. Fifth meaning of Vishwa is that because he empowers Vayu by being present in his heart as Paramatma. Like this, 100 meanings. Okay, next word, 100 meanings. Mesmerized everyone. Finished. So, like that he did. And then ultimately, then he left for Badrikashram, because he was told by his spiritual master that he should write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Because he said, if you write, then it's like, you know, one moon which will minimize all the stars. That means once you write, you don't have to just go on confronting everyone. Just one book will just establish all this philosophy and then completely defeat the impersonalism. So when he went to Badrikashram, he just happened to meet Vyasdev over there. And Vyasdev helped him to write this Brahma Sutra. In fact, whatever he had written, the Gita Bhashya, Narana Rishi said that you are not written to the best of the capacity. Should write. So he stayed there for 48 days and he wrote. And then he came back again. On his way back, he just, you know, met, it seems it said, he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him the whole thing, whatever is to be done. And he said, when I come, I will be preaching this Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. But that he said, now you just keep it as a secret. Don't tell this to. So he did not reveal this. But at the same time, Madhvacharya knew about it. And he said that, you know, while he was back in Udupi, he knew that something good is going to happen. And while I was at Malpe Beach, a boat got stuck. Madhvacharya, with the flow of his hand, some say with the flow of cloth, he just released it out and said that during that time the captainship wanted to give something. So when he came to me, he's from Dwarka, so he said, please give me those locks of wood, the sandal wood which you have, chandan. And then 50 men could not lift it, but Madhvacharya himself lifted those. And on his way, one broke. Balramji came out from this, installed very close to the beach. And the other one, we got it back to the temple. And there, he established the deity worship. And one of his contribution is the strict deity worship standards that he had set over here at Udupi Mutt. He did not build a very elaborate, temple here, because he did not want the temple to be bigger than the Anateshwar temple or Chandamauleshwar temple. But his contribution was that he actually established those deity worship over there, strict deity worship, like, you know, how many pujas, number of pujas the whole day, you know. And he had those eight principal disciples and established eight mathas. And he said in pair, he instructed them that, you know, you should worship them every 2 months and preach otherwise. But later on, Vadiraj, after a few years, over a period of time, he understood that 2 months you know, very less. You cannot do much over there. Others cannot do much preaching also. If they go out and come, because there's no planes or flights that time that you can come and go and come back. If you go to preaching, you are out for many months. So then he started having every 2 years that, you know, that person comes in a rotation, they do it. So his 8 principal disciples, he just chose and made them in charge. Like Rishikesh Tirth, he made him in charge of one mutt, that is, you know, Palimar mutt. Then he made Narhar Tirth in charge of the Admer mutt. Then he made Janardhan Tirth in charge of the Krishnapur mutt. Then he made Upendra Tirth in charge of the Puttige mutt. Then he did Vaman Tirth in charge of Shirur mutt. And then Vishnu Tirth in charge of the Shode mutt. And then he made Ramatith in charge of the Kanyur Mutt, and Adokshaj Tirth in charge of the Pejavar Mutt. And this is how we did. And now what is happening is that they all worship the deities in Paryaya. That's called as Paryaya. Every 2 years they establish, they have worships where they chant verses, establish rituals and everything has been performed. And another thing about is that the Mool Ram, you know, he wanted some other that Mool Ram deities. So when he was on his way back from Badrikashram, he was at Andhra Pradesh, and there he had a person, he met a person named as Narahari, who later on became his disciple, Narahar Tirtha, and he wanted to become a sannyasi. He wanted to dedicate his life, but some other he was told that you should go and get a Mool Ram deities. Now, somehow to get a Mool Ram deities was not an easy thing, because that belonged to the king of Orissa. And Ikshvaku had given it to Dasharath, Dasharath had given it to Lord Ram, and Lord Ram had given it to Lakshman, and Lakshman had given it to a Brahmin who was staying at that time during Lord Ramchandra's reign, who would not eat till he sees Lord Ram. So one day he had fasted for almost like 10-15 days. So seeing that, Lord Ram told that you should give this deity to him. But after his leaving the body, then the deity again came back to Lakshman. Lakshman gave it to Hanuman. Then Hanuman, in the Dwapar Yuga, when he met Bhim, he gave it to Bhim. Then the Pandavas had this in their study, and then Pandavas gave it to the king of Orissa, Kshemakant, at that time. And this remained with the king of Orissa. So Narahari Tirth actually went to this place, and at that time the king of Orissa left the body. And there was a custom that, you know, the next person would be the son, but the son was quite young, so he could not take up the role of the king there. So somebody had to become a king. So there was a custom that an elephant with the garland would go around, and whoever the elephant garland, that person would be the king for some time, you know, till the son grows up. So garlanded Narahari, and Narahari became the king for some time. He really took care of the kingdom for almost about 12-14 years or something like that. And when the child came to a respectable age where he can take over the kingdom, then Narahari came. The child was very happy, asked what he want. He said, you give me that Mool Ram deities. And the Mool Ram deity was given to him. He accepted it. And then just few months before Madhvacharya left the body, the Mool Ram deity was given to him. So when he got it, you know, he was very happy to receive them. And then he again installed in his ashram. And on this particular day, that while he was in Ananteshwar temple, Madhvacharya was sitting on his asan in Ananteshwar, and in the presence of his disciples, there was chanting going on, recitation of the Aitra Upanishad verses were going on, the celestial, you know, heavenly abode, the people were just showering flowers on him, and at that moment he just left this planet. So this was on this particular day, in the bright fortnight of the month of Magh, on the 9th day that he left this world. So we owe a lot to Sripad Madhvacharya for his contribution, the tremendous contribution that he has made for all of us, so that we can practice this particular principles of Vaishnavism and chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna. గ్రంథరాజ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం కీ జై, శిల ప్రభుపాద్ కీ జై.